Hello, big boys and girls, parents and grandparents, and everyone interested in AI and robotics. I'm Anastasia, and I am professor for AI and cybersecurity, an entrepreneur, and a creator of the AI Romy and Robby series. I am bringing to your attention AI Snacks with Romy and Robby, and this is a podcast for technology muggles, not wizards. I translate AI and robotic technologies from difficult to easy to understand. And here, for those who might watch this program on YouTube, this is the real Romy, my furry muse and an AI influencer. So today, we will discuss the stand of AI in Germany. And I have a fantastic guest for you, and this is Kenza IHC Apple. She's an engineer by training, and she wrote her thesis about clustering algorithms. Kenza is not only a fantastic engineer, but she's a best-selling author. She wrote books for kids, and she wrote books for adults explaining AI to general public. And finally, Kenza is a CTO with quite a large German logistic business called Figer. She's a chief technology officer there, and she is responsible for deploying artificial intelligence capabilities within the Figer business. So we will cover today why is understanding AI important at all? And what is the stand of understanding AI and thinking about AI in Germany? Is a German entrepreneurial culture open for AI, or are there some concerns? How is AI being portrayed within German newspapers? So now it's time to bring Kenza to the studio. And here I am in the studio with Kenza IHC Apple. And Kenza is a CTO and executive leadership team member of Figer Group, which is a company in transportation and logistics. The company is headquartered in Germany, if I'm not mistaken. Mm-hmm. And it has quite a rich history of over 150 years. Welcome, Kenza.
Yes, thanks, Anastasia.
And Kenza could be considered a Germany's AI queen. So she has been around the block for a couple
one
of years.
Them. Only one of them. There are many.
No, but I mean, it's truly, it's a pleasure that you are here. And obviously my audience has no technical background. So I'm not talking to mathematicians. I'm talking to normal people who have interest in AI. And I'm quite curious, Kenza, when you describe AI and robotics, what definitions are you using when you talk about those two quite large technology families and concepts?
Yes. Yes, this is indeed a difficult question. We know there is no definition of artificial intelligence. The term exists since the 1950s, and mainly everybody uses it in a different way. I like to look at it as a toolbox.
Yeah.
Right. And it's a big toolbox with different sections. And in there, you have all tools that allow a machine, to adapt or to develop cognitive tasks that we usually only know from humans.
Yeah.
Right. So on the outer parts, you have all kind of tools. I mean, even robotics, but the software robotic part. So we're talking about process automation. You also have visual detection. So the ability of a machine to see, to hear, natural language processing. Then you have machine learning. Then you have deep learning. And within the deep learning tool section, you have the generative, AI. So it's everything is in this toolbox, and the secret is to know which tool to use for what use case.
Yes.
So this is really where the expertise comes from. You have different tools, but you have to know what you're doing, because not all tools will help you with all your problems.
This is absolutely so. And in my experience, is this domain expertise, this is so what we call, let's say someone works in a hospital. This is a very different use case from, for example, transportation and logistic company, right? So this domain expertise and the knowledge of data inside the domain, this is kind of, you know, the holy grail, whether applicability of one or another AI tool will be successful or not. Are you transcribing to those lines or do you have a different view on that?
Yes. So yeah. you need to know what you're doing. You need to know what you're doing.
Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. And Kenza, so obviously your company resides in Germany. And Germany used to have a reputation as a country with fantastic engineering. And I mean, indeed, we had niche champions which were famous all around the globe in machinery. So your business, transportation and logistics, people know Germany for its expertise with technology. And then a couple of weeks ago, I saw economists claiming that Germany is a sick man of Europe because the digitization and applicability of digital tools lag behind so many countries and geographies. So how do you view Germany? Could you please talk a little bit about implementation of AI and robotics in Germany?
Yes, I mean, you almost answered the question. So Germany has been really strong in building machines, and this expertise led to growth.
Yes.
And wealth.
Yes.
And we still have many hidden champions in very small niches in the industry. And you will see machines all over the world coming from Siemens or you know, German companies. So this is still the case. Now, enriching those machines with AI, with software, this is the missing part.
Yes.
Right? So we have the competition, let's say, right now is basically software companies. And software companies who excel in user experience and user friendliness in their usage, right? So this is something that German companies haven't adopted yet. So if you look at the technological development in terms of which tools are being used today, we see software everywhere and we say, of course, Germany is the sick man of Europe. It's behind. That's for sure. Still, the software works on machines. It's not, you know, it's in the cloud. Okay. But it's not in the sky. So there are still machines behind and you still need this infrastructure to make the software work. And we need to combine software and hardware for Germany to strive again.
Yes.
And this is the last missing part, I would say, that, yeah, this has the potential to put Germany in the spotlight again.
You know, sometimes I think about Charles Perrault or Brother Grimm fairy tales of Sleeping Beauty. So, you know, the Sleeping Beauty of Germany is sleeping and obviously everything is intact. It's not that, right? It's not a corpse, but it's not truly alive. You're completely right. So this software component is one thing, but this combination of software and hardware might actually revive the sleeping beauty of Germany. Mm-hmm. And so we are talking this, obviously sensors, right? And Internet of Things and combination of those sensors and then the data coming out of the machines. So how do you view this development of sensor technologies in Germany and components maybe of robotic technologies in combination with software?
I mean, even this development is quite advanced in Germany.
Yeah.
Right? So IoT is actually happening. Also digital twins. This is also happening in Germany. Still, there is a little bit more to do in terms of data analytics and machine learning and creating new business models based on those data, right? Yes. And in my point of view, this is not happening enough because the way these projects work don't really match the German culture, in my point of view. Machine learning investments are unpredictable. You need to invest first in creating data infrastructure, in creating a data structure, in, you know, making data available and having access to it and preparing it and putting quality so that you can actually use it.
Yeah.
And then you invest all of this and maybe it will take you 1 or 2 years, even depending if you didn't have any data gathering in the past, to have it really in a certain quality that you need to do something with it.
Right.
And then you analyze this data and then you run some models on them and then you realize, okay, it's good, but it's not 100% enough to create a new business model, right? So you invested 2 years in almost nothing, or at least in financial terms, it was nothing. In terms of learning and development and intellectual property, it was a lot, but it's difficult to quantify.
Yes.
Right? So, if you expect, which is in my opinion, the case right now in German companies, we still expect investments to be, to follow a traditional path, right? We sit there, we calculate our costs, then we estimate our revenues, and then we have a break-in even someday, and then we have a return on invest, and then we decide, okay, the numbers look good, we can invest.
Yes.
But in machine learning projects, this is really hard to calculate.
Yes.
It is really hard to estimate revenues. You can estimate costs, and even then, you're not very precise. Because unless you have started working with the data and developing the models, you don't know how much effort you still need. Maybe still in data preparation or in infrastructure. So both components of a business case are very hard to quantify. The uncertainty is very high. So basically, you cannot decide upon business case anymore. You can only decide upon your guts, your gut feeling, and how much you trust your team, how much you trust the expertise, and how much you trust the future.
Right.
So basically you need to be bold. You need to have a lot of courage and invest in the future. You're making strategic investment, not a transactional investment. And this is, as I said, this is something the German culture needs to get used to.
Yeah. No, I mean, those kind of, you know, break even points aren't obvious, right? But this is, I don't want to be philosophical now. How intelligent is artificial intelligence and how artificial is artificial intelligence? Because, I mean, we can go there and stay in those woods. But, I mean, intelligence takes time. I mean, we are both mothers. We know our kids aren't born with, let's say a university degree. So we invest into our kids so that they digest information, they grow, and sometimes they leapfrog certain things because they accumulate information. And sometimes with technology, you really require a certain time. Especially when you are building your domain expertise, when you are experimenting with software and hardware tool, building this domain knowledge for your company. Do you have any advice for people who would love to explore machine learning and AI? What would you recommend how to proceed if they want to solve problems with AI and machine learning? But they don't necessarily know how to start. So what would you advise those people?
There are many training and courses online. So learning basically is the answer, right? There's a lot of offering out there. You will find many universities even offering their courses for free.
Yes.
So basic AI understanding, basic machine learning courses, basic Python courses. So you do find a lot on the web. to learn some basics. And you can try playing, let's say, with small exercises, and then you understand how the systematic works. So
yeah,
how everything in the background works. And you might not need to become the best developer or computer scientist, but understanding those basics will always be helpful. So
yeah.
Let's imagine we talked earlier about a domain expertise, right? So if I am a sustainability expert, let's say, nowadays you need data analytics for everything, basically. So if you understand the basics of machine learning and then you have your expertise, then you will develop ideas how to use machine learning to help you with your CO2 reporting or with
right.
your, you know, analyzing data. Even visualizing data is helpful many times. So just making it show you the insights behind, that is already helpful. And then starting from there, you can build up your expertise and then you understand also your boundaries, and then you can get experts in the topic if you need deeper knowledge. But it's a step by step approach.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, learning, this is so tremendously important. I am looking into international businesses, not necessarily residing in Germany. And I see a lot of so-called chief educational officers popping up. So as business
yeah.
title. And I don't have really any judgment. I think this is a beautiful idea because if, let's say, companies of a certain size, someone should be dedicated full time to explore what is out there, what would be the best course, let's say, for this segment of my employees mm-hmm. population or that segment. So how do I train youngsters versus, let's say, elderly people?
Yeah, yeah.
So I think this is a valuable contribution. Are those chief educational officers around in Germany, or is it something completely outlandish?
I know exactly one person. But that doesn't mean that they don't exist. Just with this exact title, Mohanna, who used to work for Microsoft and now she works for Cariad. It's a German company. So, I mean, many companies have understood that they need to keep up with the technological developments and that they need to teach their teams. Right?
Yeah.
To stay up to date. That's for sure. And there are investments, in different companies. The question is, okay, is the title chief learning officer, as we talked about, or just a department within human resources taking care
right.
of leadership and development? I think that's different. Among companies. But I would say generally this is, for me, it's also part of the AI strategy in a company.
Yeah.
So at Fiege, I'm also responsible for this topic, for the AI strategy concretely. And for me, it's six pillars. And one of them is definitely education and
yeah.
enablement. So for that, I am talking with the people and culture team to build up courses for the different segments, as we said. So maybe I'm triggering it because it's coming from technology and I say, okay, we have higher demands in there. So we need to make sure, that we have offerings, to educate our people. And I guess, from other topics, there should be a push also, towards, people and culture or human resources departments, depending how they go.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I'm curious because, you are a podcaster as well. So you are on this highly successful, podcast in German language, exploring, the landscape of AI and robotic in healthcare. So mostly, right? Of course, you have other guests as well from regulation, etc. So you hear a lot. How is actually AI and robotic being portrayed by media in Germany. So maybe traditional media is one thing, and another thing is, you know, podcasters and so streamers, mm-hmm. YouTubers. So do you see their differences? Do you see, so what is your opinion?
The media basically treats the topics how, or the same way the society expects them to do somehow.
Uh-huh.
Because I have different interviews with the media and even, you know, traditional print, newspapers, radio, everything. And they keep asking me these negative questions. So
yeah.
What are the challenges? What are the risks? People are afraid of AI. And I ask them back, why are you asking these questions? I mean, it's all negative. If you ask those negative questions, it makes it hard for me to turn them to a positive narrative. And the answer is, well, this is what people would like to hear because people are afraid of AI. So sometimes I don't know if what is the standing point? Mm-hmm. Are people afraid of AI? And then we try to explain why they are afraid and why they shouldn't be afraid. But then when listening to this or reading this, those who weren't afraid, they get afraid because suddenly they see all the risks.
Yeah. Is it not like a chicken and an egg?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So this is why I'm thinking if we could just stop talking about the risks, maybe people get less afraid. At the same time, we cannot ignore the risks.
Yeah.
So it's a very difficult situation to be in. So the role I try to have is like neutral. Okay, let's talk about the positive things. Let's talk about the negative things. And, you know, let the people decide for themselves where they want to go. But we have opportunities and we have challenges, of course. We just cannot hide behind the challenges and close our eyes or put our head in the sand, because the challenges won't disappear, right?
Yeah.
We need to tackle them. So it's, we are talking in my opinion, we're talking too much about risks.
Yeah.
And of course we want to reduce these risks, no problem, but we're more talking about risks than about opportunities.
Yeah, this is interesting what you're saying. And of course, it's chicken and egg. If you're always in a defensive mode, so let me explain, it's still good or there are benefits. It's a very different approach comparing to, maybe Silicon Valley is another example, you know.
It's on the other extreme.
it's a very different extreme. Some people criticize the smoke and mirrors culture, you know, mm-hmm. fake it until you make it. Mm-hmm. But I would love to have something just sober and healthy. And I just think we must democratize knowledge of AI because without, there won't be voices of citizens in how this technology should look like. Mm. And of course, because of what I do professionally, I truly believe we must have automation and AI to balance the GDP of a country and to kind of, you know, work against the demographical decline. We must ease a burden on certain tasks which none of us would love to do. This is like, you know, I'm a very, very convinced person here. But how do you build trust that AI and robotics could be forces for positive change and for good and to ease burden of certain jobs and to reduce risks in certain occupations? How do we build trust? What is your opinion?
Mm-hmm. I think this is similar to how people build trust to other people, I would say. I think this is the difficult thing with trust. There is no recipe that works for everybody. Usually you have either people who give trust, they trust first, and then when they have negative experience, they reduce their trust. And on the other hand side, you have people who don't trust and whose trust needs to be gained, right? So it's hard work. to get them trust you. And so depending what kind of person you are, it might be helpful to learn about technology. Then, okay, you understand what's going on and then you trust it and then you experience it. And then, you know, either you build up your trust or you lose it. And for the skepticals out there, I think it's really difficult to make them experience if they belong to the people who start by trust zero.
Yeah.
Right?
But I mean,
because you need to make this experience. You need to live it. You need to experience it to be able to make up your mind. This is something you cannot just read in the newspaper. Right?
Right.
So, I mean, even if we're talking about conversational AIs, for example, and their use even in therapy. So people who use them say it is really helpful. Many therapists even say that they can be helpful and that people should use them. They don't substitute the therapist, but many people open up much better when dealing with a machine than with a human therapist.
Yes.
So as a combination, it is good and it should be used. But if you're so skeptical, you don't even want to test it and to experience it, you just think about it and say, no, it's impossible. I want a person because an AI can never help me. And then it's difficult to gain the trust. So it's, I think it really depends on the person. It's hard to influence, from outside. Maybe the only thing is really just education.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, I just wonder because sometimes I really wonder whether people are aware how much AI they already use.
Yeah.
And probably, I mean, AI is not something, let's say, it's really not a Terminator approaching you, you know, to have a conversation or maybe to hurt you, but we carry AI in our pockets. And still, this kind of a barrier. So I wonder whether media might just do a better job to highlight that this technology is deeply embedded into our lives. And I wonder why are they not doing so? Maybe because they're afraid themselves.
Well, I think there is a lot happening there already. And you know, one positive thing about ChatGPT is that after that, people realize AI is not only the Terminator, it's not only science fiction, but it can also be GPT, ChatGPT. So this was already a positive development. And I think that science fiction is one of the reasons why some people are really afraid of AI, because they see these machines and, you know, these humanoids and, you know, and they are taking over the power and killing people and all these, you know, bad ends. So this, they project AI to these science fiction sceneries. Now, after having a generative AI and a chatbot, you know, talking with you, people think, okay, AI is also ChatGPT. But we shouldn't stop there because AI is only one tool in that big toolbox I said at the beginning, right? And it's not good for everything. It's good for generating text, but that's it. It's not a search machine. So this is why we need to keep up with the education. And I think latest after ChatGPT, some people also realize that their cell phones are basically you know, an AI in their pocket. So I think in this aspect, at least we are a step ahead.
Yeah. And I mean, frankly, so obviously your company has an AI strategy. I wish all companies, big and small, would have an AI strategy, already to explain that AI doesn't necessarily kill jobs. It's changing jobs. It's augments jobs, but not necessarily this, you know, abolishing certain jobs. And I wonder how much of this discussion do you see in Germany? So the impact of AI on professions and job clusters.
There's a lot of discussion in this. I would say maybe one of the top three topics it's AI in relation to labor markets of the future and how jobs will be affected. And here the discussion is also really interesting, depending who are the actors, let's say. So, people who don't work in the field usually just see, okay, AI is taking over jobs because we are automating repetitive tasks. Now we are even automating with an AI, you know, some creative tasks, and which means in the future we won't need those people. People who do apply AI in daily or in their jobs see that this technology is the only way to be able to deliver our services and products in the future.
Yeah.
Because as you said, demographics, especially in this region of the world, we are shrinking, right? Many people will go on pension in the next 5 years. And the labor market is just very, 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 I would say on danger, but not for the people, but rather for the services, right? And everybody expects everything to happen quickly. You order something online and you expect it to be at home, at your home delivered within 20, 25 hours. And all of this supply chain behind. So we're talking from production to delivery, logistics, everything. This needs to happen in no time.
Yeah.
And nobody wants to work in these fields. So then you ask yourself, how can people expect their needs to be fulfilled and all of their services to be there as they used to be before without having kids, without foreign friendly immigration laws and without automation and robotics?
Yeah.
I mean, I just clueless how people think this could work, right?
I'm completely with you. Can sign every single word you've just said. The status quo is not sustainable because we lack adults. We lack labor, basic labor, and we must do something about it. And Kenza, I know it might maybe be a strange question, but I know that you read a lot and that you love books. You know, I made it kind of part of my job on this podcast, AI Snacks with Rom and Robbie, to discuss sci-fi.
Mm-hmm.
Because I just think that, it opens imagination, and there are certain scenarios which are hugely fascinating. So I've just recorded an episode where I discussed physics and quantum entanglement in three-body problem.
Oh, wow.
And actually what is real and what is not. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, and what are those sophons? In the books, whether they are, could be real. So those intelligent protons. How do you view sci-fi altogether? And, do you think a lot about it, in the context of AI and robotics, or are you just kind of, I enjoy now. So. Whatever.
Oh, no, I do. And I really love it. I need to listen to this podcast that you just mentioned, definitely, because entanglement is also something that I find really fascinating, although I don't understand it as much as you do. Working on it. So science fiction. I absolutely agree that sci-fi opens up our creativity and also the way we think of the art of the possible, what could be possible, right?
Yes.
And I'm really fascinated how the film directors get these ideas, or the script writers, depending the authors. Because sometimes I'm like, how could they? I mean, they're projecting themselves in like 20, 30, 50 years.
Yeah.
You know, you have a technological trend that you can follow, but still, usually they're outside of this trend.
Right.
And this for me as an engineer, you know, very, very basic zero and ones, this is really fascinating. So what I did for my last book is actually analyze different science fiction films and use them to explain different machine learning and AI developments and try to explain what is the technological development, what's the trend out of this film, and what is fiction?
Yes. You know,
to make this separation to say, okay, the way the author in this film is describing the situation. Until here, it's technology, and it can be like this if it develops further. But then this point, this is too much. This is fiction. Yeah. At least for now, at least for the scientific knowledge that we have today, this is fiction.
Right.
I cannot say if it will be able or realistic in 50 years. It could be.
But
based on the science we have today, this is just fiction. So I love actually watching these films and analyzing them in this way.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, look, I absolutely love what you are saying, and I will put information on your book, which is in German language, into my show notes. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And as well, your absolutely marvelous book for children about a little robot. I just really wish you all the best with everything you do. And just a little announcement. Next summer, my company, AI Edutainment, will hire an intern to actually investigate the concepts of AI and robotics in sci-fi. And if you are studying literature, or if you're studying science, or you're maybe even in senior in your school, and you do a school project, like a year project, about sci-fi, you're welcome to be my intern. And let's investigate those concepts together, because I think we learn so much from what is real, what is already there, what could be there in a couple of years, and what is really imaginary. But Kenza, thank you so much for being my guest, and all the best to you.
Yeah, thanks for the invitation.
And that was my conversation with Kenza at Sea Apple. Time to say goodbye now. And before we meet next week, please go to Amazon and pre-order Romy Robbie and The Secrets of Sleep, the first adventure from my AI series, Romy and Robbie. If you have further questions, please address me on social media. You might have interesting feedback, or you might have questions on what I should discuss and decode in my future podcast episodes. I'm always grateful for your feedback, because I learn tons. I can't always promise that I will bring this very cat to the podcast. He doesn't like to sit put for 40 minutes. But I'm quite grateful that he granted us with his presence to say goodbye. So goodbye for now, and let's transform AI into something understandable, clear, transparent, and beneficial for all of us.